council's in a jovial mood this evening. Miss City Clerk, are we at the appropriate time to start the meeting and you're ready?
We are ready.
I call our regular session to order. We'll begin with the Pledge of Allegiance by Mayor Pro Tem Fonzie. Thank you. First, we will go ahead with a roll call, please.
Councilmember Borbo.
Here.
Councilmember Moreno.
Here.
Councilmember Sturtevant.
Here.
Vice Mayor Fonzie.
Here.
Mayor O'Malley.
Here.
All present.
Thank you. Next item is the approval of the agenda. And with the approval of the agenda, we are waiving the reading in full of all ordinances appearing on this agenda, and the titles of the ordinances will be read aloud by the city clerk at the first reading after the motion and before the city council votes.
Move approval.
Second.
We have a motion by Councilman Sturtevant, seconded by Mayor Pro Tem Fonzie. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Sturtevant?
Yes.
Councilmember Borbo?
Yes.
Councilmember Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Vice Mayor Fonzie?
Yes.
And Mayor O'Malley?
Yes.
5-0, motion passes.
Thank you. And congratulations on your promotion to Vice Mayor now from Mayor Pro Tem. Well, it's my honor to give the proclamation recognizing May 7th through 13, 2017 is National Travel and Tourism Week. And we have Mr. Pringle here this evening. Welcome. If you'd like to come up to the lectern, I will go ahead and read some of the items. And we'll have an opportunity for you to speak. Whereas travel has a positive effect on the city of Atascadero and the nation's economic prosperity and image abroad, it also impacts business productivity and individual travelers' well-being. And whereas travel is among the largest private sector employers in the United States, supporting 15.3 million jobs in 2016, including 8.6 million directly in the travel industry and 6.7 million in other industries. And whereas travel spending directly generated tax revenues of $157.8 billion for federal, state, and local governments, funds which were used to support essential services and programs. And whereas meetings, events, and incentive travel are core business functions that help companies strengthen business performance, which in turn boosts the economy. And whereas leisure travel, which accounts for more than three-quarters of all trips taken in the United States, spurs countless benefits to travelers' health and wellness, creativity, cultural awareness, education, happiness, productivity, and relationships. And whereas travel is a pillar of economic growth, creating jobs at a faster rate than other sectors, now therefore we, the City Council of the City of Atascadero, do hereby proclaim this time period is National Travel and Tourism Week in Atascadero, California, and urge the citizens of Atascadero to join in this special observance with appropriate events and commendations or commemorations. I'm having a heck of a time reading this. I'm just so excited about all the things there are to do. And what's nice about the transient occupancy tax that we often are talking about, that's not something that we are assessing on individuals. That's something that people decide, we want to go do this. We want to go travel. And in the process, there's some tax revenue generated. And I'm happy to say our city has had the highest growth rate in that in our county. And we think that's because we've had some good policies and good decisions in promoting marketing and promotion and special events. And we're happy to see our hotels not only grow in number, but actually grow in stays. And as I used to always say, it's kind of nice to let visitors pay for the ambiance we get to enjoy for free. So, Mr. Pringle, what else would you add to this about this special week?
Well, first of all, thank you, members of the council. Visit SoCal is very excited to be celebrating National Travel and Tourism Week this week. And as you know, tourism is critical to the economic health of San Luis Obispo County, saving each individual taxpayer nearly $600 in taxes in 2016. And recent numbers indicate tourism grew in SLO County to $1.59 billion in 2016, a 10% increase since 2012. This means that every second guest in San Luis Obispo County spend $50 at our local businesses. This economic impact supports community services and employs one out of every eight people in the county, and local tax revenues totaled $61.7 million, which can be articulated into revenue to offset the expense of, for instance, 898 police officers, 119 miles of two-lane roads resurfaced, 1,025 firefighters, or 86 parks, services that add to resident safety, security, and quality of life. In honor of National Travel and Tourism Week, we will be hosting our annual tourism exchange this Thursday, May 11th, at 11 a.m. at the Embassy Suites in San Luis Obispo. The event will feature a State of County Tourism address, a keynote address from Visit California. The President and CEO of Visit California is joining us for the third year in a row. Announcement of our annual tourism awards, new educational insight sessions, and a celebratory evening networking event afterwards. And just so you guys know, the tourism exchange is recorded every year, and so it is available on our website on visitsanluisobispocounty.com. So, thank you.
Well, thank you. And I think we're going to join you for a photo op right up in front, and we're going to ask our Deputy Director of Marketing and Promotion Special Events, Terry Banish, to join us. She can't take the picture tonight. Well, again, thank you, Mr. Pringle, for being here. Next item on the agenda is consent calendar, which are items believed to be routine in nature and can be voted on as a block unless any member of the public would like to pull one for further discussion or if a member of the council would like to do so. Any member of the council wishing to pull an item? Any member of the public wishing to pull an item? Seeing none, then we can entertain a motion on the consent calendar.
Move approval.
Second.
We have a motion by Councilwoman Moreno, seconded by Councilman Sturtevant. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Councilmember Sturtevant?
Yes.
Councilmember Burbo?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Fonzi?
Yes, for all except item one, which I will abstain from because I was not present.
Okay. And Mayor O'Malley?
Yes.
Thank you. All right. Passes 5-0.
Thank you.
Except for one.
Well, now at least some folks can go home early tonight. And we'll move on to the updates from the city manager.
Thank you, Mayor and council members. I wanted to let you know how our open house at Fire Station 1 went this weekend. The Atascadero Fire Department held an open house at Fire Station 1 last Saturday. We are estimating that we had between 400 and 500 people who stopped by throughout the day. Our firefighters held two demonstrations that were very popular with the crowds. The first was how to use fire extinguishers and involved putting out live fire. And the second was an auto extrication that was very exciting, probably more exciting for Councilmember Moreno than a lot of us, as she volunteered to be the victim inside the the car that they used the Jaws of Life to rescue her.
Did they use your car?
No, they did not use it. Yeah, it was a fantastic demonstration. I got a chance to go watch, and I said it would have been a little bit dicey there as they put the blanket over you and you can't see to protect you from sharp shards of glass and sharp shards of metal, and you hear this loud noise of them car being ripped apart right next to you. But Council Member Reno came out with a big smile and seemed to have a good time. Our firefighters spoke with residents about wildland fires, maintaining defensible space around structures, evacuation routes, visible addresses, and weed abatement. And visitors to the open house were also able to talk with members of the Red Cross, CERT, the San Luis Ambulance, Slow Dryer Vent Cleaning, the Muscular Dystrophy Association, and Lighthouse. They gave rides on the 1929 Model A fire engine, and that was a big hit with the kids and some adults. And there was also a bounce house and water spring from the fire hose. Our firefighters served barbecue hot dogs, chips, and drinks. And despite the cool weather on Saturday, Cold Stone ice cream was very popular. So it was a lot of fun, and we hope to do it again next year. It was a great event. And speaking of great events, the Downtown Art and Wine Tour will be held this Friday evening, May 12th, from 5:30 to 8:30 p.m. Tickets are $15 each and will be available here in front of City Hall and at the corner of Entrada and El Camino. The price of the ticket includes your wine glass with wine tasting available at more than 15 downtown merchant locations. In addition to special evening hours of the historic City Hall, In addition, special evening tours of City Hall will be conducted by the Historical Society docents. So we'll have not just to those that purchase tickets, anyone who wants to come from 5:30 to 8:30 this Friday, they will be doing tours here of City Hall. We'll also have tours of Fire Station 1 at the corner of Lewis and Traffic Way, conducted by our fire and emergency services staff. And the event is brought to you by the Atascadero Chamber of Commerce in the city of Atascadero. We have the second annual Central Coast Cider Festival will be held on Saturday, May 13th at the Pavilion on the Lake. Tickets are still available and can be purchased at centralcoastciderfestival.com, all one word. This is a wonderful opportunity to try out a wide variety of ciders, meet the cider makers, enjoy a traditional English pig roast dinner, plus terrific live music. I know that everybody attended last year, was very excited and enjoyed the event, would like to come back this year. And then on Mother's Day, so we have something Friday, Saturday, and then Sunday, we have our cookie adventure at the Charles Paddock Zoo. And this is a tradition we've had at the zoo for some time. Local cookie makers will be at the Charles Paddock Zoo on Mother's Day, Sunday, May 14th, between 11 and 2 p.m., handing out samples of lots of scrumptious cookies to all our zoo visitors. Plan to take Mom to the zoo on Sunday for a tasty treat while visiting with the animals at the zoo. Cookies are included in the price of admission, and it's a wonderful day to go visit the zoo. Lake Fest is coming up. The Friends of Lake will hold their second annual Lake Fest on Saturday, May 20th from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. at Atascadero Lake. There's sure to be a terrific day filled with lots of fun activities, including live music, lots of food and vendor booths, a beer garden, and a raffle for a chance to win fun prizes. Plus, there will be very exciting cardboard boat races and stand-up paddleboard races. There will be plenty of supplies on hand for kids to build and race their own cardboard boats, too, so don't miss the great event. It's going to be a lot of fun. And all funds raised will benefit Friends of Atascadero Lake. It's looking to shape up to be a fun day. Cycle de Mayo 2017, the annual Cycle de Mayo event, was held at Atascadero Lake Park over the weekend. It included a professional BMX stunt show, a kids' bike rodeo, and skills training with bike check and helmet check, a bike parts swap meet and barbecue, and a lot more. Yeah. This event was hosted by the North County Cycle Peds, and the purpose of this event is to reach out to the community, especially school-aged children, to provide bicycle safety, education, advocacy to promote bicycling in the North County, and to increase social awareness of the value of bicycling. All proceeds for this event support bicycle education, advocacy, and help fund new bicycle infrastructure to connect bicycle trails and links in the North County. This is a really fun annual event that is rotated through the North County communities. Last year it was held in Templeton, and next year it'll be in Paso Robles. We enjoyed having it here in Atascadero. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any council questions? Go ahead.
If you keep it on that cycle, DeMaio, the only reason that I agreed to have shards of glass and metal flying at me is I thought the mayor was going to be lying there under the BMX jump. What happened?
The mayor doesn't lie anywhere.
There we go. But no, I wanted to thank FIRE. I actually volunteered myself because I thought it sounded fun, and they graciously let me do that, and it was a really good time. And everybody I talked to that was there was really enjoying it. The kids were enjoying it, and I think it was very educational and fun, which it's great when those two things can go together.
Well, it has gotten to be a challenge. There are so many events and activities going on at Atascadero. All council members have to split up to cover them all. It's kind of a challenge, but it is very good. And we essentially started Cycle de Mayo here in Atascadero. It's grown to be quite a big event in the North County with a number of organizations taking on and doing the heavy lifting now. But it is something we want to continue to support. Not only does it focus on school safety, we are really looking at advocating for more bicycle pedestrian alternatives to being on busy streets and highways. That actually expands the use of highways for vehicles at a lower cost, and it also provides more safety for our youth. So we'll continue to work on that, and we're actually very competitive given that we have an intersection of two state highways in our area. With Highway 41, we're very well positioned to get assistance on improving all the roadway between our Lake Park Zoo, downtown, right on to our community center, and we're going to continue to seek those funds. Thank you for that report. No other questions or comments by council. We'll move on to Community Forum, which is an opportunity for anyone in the public to speak to us on any item that is not on the agenda but is under our jurisdiction. Anyone wishing to speak to the council? Seeing none approach, we will close the community forum portion, and we are always happy to hear from constituents, though you don't have to come to a council meeting to ask a question or give us a thought. I did want to take a moment to just point out Laura Christensen, our city clerk, has phenomenal tough job to replace Marcia Torgerson. She's done a phenomenally good job at it. Comes with great training as a city clerk, also has a law degree, very good at researching questions. I have gotten a number of compliments from constituents of how well she's followed up and timely on getting information from various departments to answer your questions. So please don't wait. You don't have to come down here. Just send an email to any council member. I guarantee you what we do, we forward it to staff so that you get a good, timely, and correct answer. So we're happy to hear from all of you, but our city clerk is on the job on helping answer any questions. Next item on the agenda is public hearings. First one is weed abatement, hearing of objections. And we are going to turn over to Fire Chief Casey Bryson for a presentation.
Well, thank you, Mayor and Council. Tonight what we have is our annual weed abatement hearing of objections. As you know, the weed abatement program is a critical component of our fuel management program. It goes along with chipping. We also have fuel modification, some of our education programs. It's a big piece of what we do. It's kind of the first line of defense against a wildfire that we have in our area. The goal here is for citizens to manage their properties, and it's not for the fire department to take over and be in the mowing or the weed cutting business. So the goal is to have the citizens manage their property so that we can all have a fire safe community. The process starts, it's basically a year-round process, but it starts in April with an inspection. We have our fire marshal drive basically the entire city, look and see how we're doing as far as weeds, and these are annual grasses that we're talking about. We mailed out over 2,300 notices this year. This picture on the bottom, it's a good illustration of the annual grasses growing. We try to have these cut because, as you know, this was what we call ladder fuels. These grasses grow right up into those trees and the brush. So the entire process eliminates these ladder fuels and keeps fires small. So that's an illustration of what we're trying to do here. June 1st is our deadline. Those notices that were sent out told everyone that have the annual grasses that June 1st is the deadline. And after that, we will have a contractor that will begin after June. We'll go out and start to abate any annual grasses. So part of this process is to allow any objections for proposed removal of vegetative growth to be heard here at council. And with that, I will give our recommendations. Council hear all objections to the proposed removal of vegetative growth and or refuse, and allow or overrule any objections, and authorize the fire chief to proceed and perform the work of abatement.
Thank you.
I'll turn it over to questions.
Any questions by council? Go ahead. Councilwoman Mayor Pro Tem Fonzie.
Yes, you said there were 2,300 notices or notifications mailed out. What are these for?
So the notices are mailed to anyone that has the weed abatement or the refuse that is exceeding what we need to have cut by June 1st. And that's about average. We mail out about 2,000 every year to people that need to have their weeds cut. Some people have been maintaining all the way through the spring. This year is a challenge because you may be cutting in May, and you may have to cut again to meet the June 1 deadline. But that's what those notices are for, to let people know that they have grasses that are exceeding those 4-inch clearance.
So that must be rather work-intensive. I wonder if the citizens actually know that they're supposed to do it by a certain date, if we could put a notice in the paper or something that would save some of that labor or some of the postage. Is there another way we could go at that, in your opinion?
Staff is currently looking at ways of saving some of that time, looking at possibly eliminating one inspection process and just noticing the entire city. So that is something that we're looking at in the near future, and hopefully we can make some changes to save some time for next year.
And it seems like this year the rains have come later than normal, that we had some this weekend and we may get more in the future. Is June 1st going to be the date if we continue with the rain, or will you automatically move it back a week or two to allow it to dry out and mow it down?
We're going to stick with June 1st. That's the deadline it has been for as long as we've been doing weed abatement, as far as I know. And I realize there will be some late cutting involved. But as you can tell, it's already starting to brown. The grasses are turning brown, and it will happen very quickly. And we have been actually responding to vegetation fires out in the county. So we're going to do our best to keep those to a minimum with the weed abatement.
Thank you.
Other council questions? Do you think there's some advantage to have a predictable, repeatable date that, okay, we know that? I do think it would be great if Tascadero News, Paso Robles Press, did a feature story once a year just on fire safety and reminding folks, because it is something that folks really can do to help protect their community, a pretty low cost for a lot of value. And I do know that our city manager is working on, who is one of the lines of getting feedback from community if there's an issue. And it is often the case, as I understand, you're inspecting, and by the time you get a letter out to everybody, you know, that inspection could have been a month ago, and maybe folks are in compliance when they get a letter and they need to let them know that, well, you know, if they're in compliance, they don't have anything to worry about. Is there an easy way for them to find out if they are in compliance, if they got a letter and, gee, I think I'm okay, who would they call?
Anyone's welcome to call into the fire station. We're happy to talk to them, talk them through it, and we'll even go out and take a look if need be. But we have information posted on the website. We have posted in newspapers before, but we didn't make it out this year. We talked to a lot of people at our open house on Saturday. We've done a fairly good job of getting the word out, but we're happy to talk. If anybody has questions, we'll talk to them over the phone.
Very good. Ms. City Manager, do you have any strategies for maybe dealing with some of those concerns that have come up by constituents?
We have. As Chief Bryson said, we're looking at redoing the whole process. to be more efficient, to try and save some of those staff dollars, to also maybe be a little bit more clear on the notice. So we'll be working through that whole process. There are some very legal things that you have to have. We want to make sure that we touch all of those bases. So we are working with the city clerk and the city attorney to make sure that our process is very legal. But that certainly we want everyone to cut their weeds by June 1st. I think you would see that the fire chief do a little dance, and he doesn't do very much dancing over there. If we had actually zero parcels abated, that would be ideal. We're getting close. We're down to 27 parcels last year. I'm hoping to get that down even further this year. This is up. We used to do several hundred a year. So we want to continually improve and refine that process to help people get their weeds cut in a timely manner. The city doesn't want to be in the weed abatement business.
Thank you. Well, before we go to public comment, it does ask for ex parte communications. So if anyone has anything to share or comments, Councilman Burbeau.
Actually, I did have a question. That is, after June 1st, when does the final notice go out and the actual, you know, when do we actually engage the contractor to abate the non-compliant properties?
We're prepared to start right after June 1st, within the next day.
Do people then get a final notice, or is it just if you don't have it done by June 1st, we could come around and abate?
That's correct. Okay. If it's not done by June 1st, we'll start.
Got it. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other council questions? Then I'll just check in. If anyone has an ex parte on this one, now would be the time. Seeing none, open it up to the public. Anyone wishing to comment on this item? Seeing no one approach, we'll close public comment, bring it back, and ready for a motion.
I'd like to make the motion, and I want to thank staff, because one of the priorities that we came away with out of strategic planning is how can we minimize work, which minimize costs, which is, of course, a cost to the taxpayer ultimately. So I'm glad we're taking a look at this, and thank you for thinking of efficiencies and ways that we can improve. So with that, I do move.
Second.
I have a motion by Councilwoman Moreno, seconded by Councilman Sturdivant. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Moreno.
Yes, ma'am.
Councilmember Sturdivant.
Yes.
Councilmember Burbeau.
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Fonzie.
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley.
Yes.
Motion passes 5-0.
Thank you. Next item is the Groundwater Sustainability Agency draft resolution. And let's go ahead with a staff report.
Thank you, Mayor and council members. As you remember, about April 11th, we brought an item to you asking whether you wanted to participate in a groundwater sustainability agency for the Atascadero Basin. At that point, we discussed several points that you guys would like to see in any memorandum of understanding or agreement that came before the council for that participation, and you gave staff some clear direction. Tonight, we're taking the next step. Part of that direction was bring back the memorandum of agreement for consideration by the council, and that's what we'll be doing tonight. This is an abbreviated compared to the presentation on April 11th version of that, but just to remind everybody, by June 30th of 2017, any groundwater sustainability agencies must be formed under SGMA. That's the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act. We are forming a groundwater sustainability agency for the Atascadero Basin, and the Atascadero Basin overlies several districts, which I'll get to in a moment. By January 31st of 2020, we must have groundwater sustainability plans adopted for basins that are in critical overdraft. We don't know what status our basin is in. We are hoping that it will be a low priority basin. But right now, we would have to believe we're in with the Paso Robles Basin, which would be a high or medium. For those that are in the high or medium priority basin, they have to adopt a groundwater sustainability plan by January 31st of 2022. And then by 20 years after adoption, the basin has to achieve sustainability, and there's some very specific points as to what sustainability is. The Atascadero Basin is separate from the Paso Robles Basin, and there's several local agencies and pumpers that overlie the basin, including Atascadero Mutual Water Company, Templeton Community Services District, City of Paso Robles. There's several small local water companies, more than I knew existed. And there's landowners in parts of the county that are not covered by any of those. And, of course, the city of Atascadero. This is a map of the basin. It's in your staff report. Hopefully it's a little bit easier to see there of all of the different overliers of the basin, and includes those, the main pumpers, which would be Templeton Community Services District, the Atascadero Mutual Water District, City and Paso Robles, and then other small water companies such as Garden Farms Water District, Santa Margarita, Ranch Mutual Water District, Santa Margarita Community Services Area, Santa Isabel Ranch, Templeton Cemetery District is actually an overlier. So there's a lot of other entities that are also involved. So tonight before you, you have a memorandum of agreement between the parties that would be interested in being a part of the groundwater sustainability agency. It is a joint agreement. It is not forming a separate legal entity, but instead is an MOA. And the purpose of the agreement is to develop a groundwater sustainability plan as required under SGMA. It does not change water rights or land use rights. We will still retain all of our land use and water rights, as would Atascadero Mutual Water or Templeton Community Services District. It does allow for unilateral withdrawal, so if at any point we did not want to be a part of the Groundwater Sustainability Agency, we could withdraw from that. And it does allow for both voting and non-voting participation. The city of Atascadero is a voting member. We are one of the forming members, so the votes are weighted. Atascadero Mutual Water Company, their vote would count for 20%. The city of Atascadero would account for 13.33%. City of Paso Robles, 20%. County of San Luis, 16.67%. Templeton Community Services, 20%. And other participating parties, those other small water companies, would have 10%. This was something that was negotiated between the different parties and talked over. The Atascadero Mutual Water Company, Templeton Community Services District, and the City of Paso Robles are the major pumpers in the basin, and along with the county, and so they did get the more heavily weighted votes. It does require a two-thirds majority for adoption of the groundwater sustainability plan, along with any bylaws and budgets and amendments. All of those do require a two-thirds vote. The costs were allocated based on pumping. It's a hybrid formula that weights pumping by 80% and land use by 20%. The chart you see is how that broke out. The city of Atascadero would have to share on 1% of the total cost of the Groundwater Sustainability Agency. We're estimating at this time that the Groundwater Sustainability Plan will cost an estimated $500,000. That is a very general estimate at this point. Certainly as we go down the process, we'll know that more. And this would be the allocation through adoption of the Groundwater Sustainability Plan. After the Groundwater Sustainability Plan, we would know what was included. We would review the allocation again prior to implementing that. The memorandum of agreement has been approved by the County Board of Supervisors, City of Paso Robles, Templeton Community Services District, Atascadero Mutual Water. So we are the last forming party to consider this item, and it's here before you. One of the things that I glossed over, and I apologize, is that if we work, the Templeton Community Services District and Atascadero Mutual Water District have submitted information to the state to show that we shouldn't be a high or medium priority basin, that should we be low or very low. If we are a low or very low, we would not be required to form a GSA. Unfortunately, we don't think we're going to get the answer to that question prior to June 30th, and so we're all moving forward. Even if we came back high or very low, the Groundwater Sustainability Agency Board might want to consider going ahead and with the formation or with the development of the Groundwater Sustainability Plan. That will be a decision for them. There's certainly some pros in doing that, and obviously the cost is a con, so that may be something that they may consider. With that, the staff recommendation is that Council adopt the draft resolution authorizing the City Manager to execute a memorandum of agreement with other participating entities forming a groundwater sustainability agency for the Atascadero Basin. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
One question I have is, what was the vote at the county supervisors on a water district issue?
I do not know that, but we do have Atascadero Mutual Water Company president. I'm not sure your title. General Manager John Neal here. Sorry about that.
Actually, the vote was 4-0. John Pichon abstained from voting.
So there you have it. Even the County Board of Supervisors unanimously approved this water issue. So.
And I understand the same thing at Templeton and Paso. There was very little discussion. They went through with unanimous votes.
The pressure is on for us. While you're here, is there anything you would add to that presentation before we go to council questions?
You know, Rochelle, in both of these meetings, she's done an excellent job summarizing a lot of information in a very digestible manner. The only thing I would encourage you to adopt her recommendation to become one of the forming parties of the Groundwater Sustainability Agency and assist us developing a sustainability agency to manage the groundwater resources in the basin.
Okay, well, thank you. Well, if you wouldn't mind waiting there for a moment, because, one, I want to say some nice things about you a little bit later, but I want to go through any council questions, and there may be some for you. So I'll ask council members to direct questions either to our city manager or to John Neal. And I see first we have Councilwoman Moreno.
I concur with what you said, Mr. Neal. She does a digestible format. Very good. So this is a really not much different from last time, except now the MOA is here, so you know, all of that we've kind of talked about and come to agreement on. Just a couple little questions. One, here is the, let's see, the, where did it go? I had it right in here. 13.3, the effect of withdrawal. So it says when a forming party or the Atascadero Mutual Water Company unilaterally withdraws without concurrently executed agreement from an other forming party authorizing such other forming party to participate in the agency over the withdrawing party's jurisdiction, then basically I think the whole thing is terminated. So in that situation, so let's say, you know, if I just use an example, Garden Farms Water Company decides that we're withdrawing. Does the county then ideally be the one that's because they're in county, or who would actually be, which agency would then cover their jurisdiction?
Yeah, that is the intent. That's why the language is in there. So if one of the smaller parties like Garden Farms pulls out of the agreement, then the county would be the default. And that would be something we would have to sit down and discuss with the county. They would have to accept that responsibility for doing that.
Okay. I guess my concern was, could any, you know, whether it's a small entity like Garden Farms or someone as big as Paso pull out, and then how do we make sure that it just doesn't terminate because one party isn't involved in it anymore?
Well, the intent was that if one of the smaller parties pulled out of the agreement, the other parties could agree to absorb the level of effort that would be required to perform their share of the work. If one of the larger parties pulled out, like Templeton or Atascadero, I think it would probably fall apart. I mean, the resources are needed to develop this plan, and we need to cover those areas to satisfy the state requirements.
Okay. And so is the Mutual Water Company they're a participating party? Forming parties can only be governmental agencies. Is that correct?
Only governmental agencies can form the GSAs, but the SGMA legislation allows private non-governmental entities like the water company to participate in them.
Right. And so your list is, I'm just looking at the signature pages. So there's the, you know, Atascadero, Paso, the county, and Templeton, all as forming parties for signature. And then participating parties is the water company. So that makes sense. But then the others aren't listed. I'm assuming they'll just be filled in later, or they each...
They'll be filled in later. They've all been approached. I know that the only one that's actually responded so far has been the Santa Margarita Ranch Mutual Water Company. The other entities have, they do have copies of the agreement. We're hoping that they do participate in this. Again, if they don't, we can sit down. They're such small players in this whole thing. We'll just rearrange the voting and the cost sharing and absorb that work, basically.
Okay. And of the other forming parties, are we the last one to pass this right now?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilwoman Fonzie, followed by Councilmember Burbeau.
Thank you. Thank you, John, for all your hard work on this, and Rochelle and our mayor also have worked hard on this one. This has actually been a monumental lift, and I've watched it from the sidelines with some help. But I have one question, and this is regarding the 13% that Atascadero has been given. We have no water that we provide. That's done by the Mutual Water Company. So I'm assuming this is for planning, and I'm wondering what effect the formation of the GSA will have on local planning in terms of land use.
I think initially probably very little, but my experience with these type of entities, I think there's going to be, I know buried in the SGMA legislation, there is a requirement to have land use decisions reviewed by this agency or entity. What authority they have in that, I don't know. The way I understand it, it's very much like one Senate bill that for large subdivisions, you have to go through and do a water analysis to make sure that there's adequate water resources, et cetera, to serve the subdivision. I sort of make it akin to that. So it'll be an analysis that's required to verify that there are adequate water resources in the basin to serve those proposed land use changes.
So do you foresee that this entity will be reviewing EIRs and doing that kind of work like the Coastal Commission does, or... What will this
I
entail?
Hope it doesn't evolve into something like that. We're hoping that, you know, we've managed this basin well for the last 100 years. This is really forcing all the entities that do draw water from the basin to coordinate their management efforts. We anticipate, based on what we know of the basin, that most of the activity of this agency are going to be transparent to your activities with regard to land use planning.
Thank you.
Councilmember Burbeau.
Yeah, Mr. Neal, question on the executive committee. Because normally when I think of an executive committee, I think of it as being a subset of the voting members, but it appears all of the entities are part of the executive committee, except that the smaller water companies.
Correct.
Okay, except the smaller water companies only get like...
They get a smaller, weighted vote. And then there are members on the executive committee that don't get a vote, which are the large ag users, rural residential users. So they'll be able to take part in all the discussions and deliberations of the executive committee. They just won't have a vote in it.
And I was wondering, so those are listed as a rural residential at large, an ag at large, and an environmental at large. Who chooses them?
Those are going to be chosen by the county.
All of them by the mm-hmm. county? Okay.
Yeah, because the county's representing those interests outside of the other jurisdictions and service areas.
Gotcha. Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. Any other council questions? And before we go to the public, we do have to offer ex parte communications where, again, we tell the members of the public any contact we've had outside of this public forum where we have received information that might impact our decision, and this would be one where we have had quite a bit of meetings outside of this meeting. And I did want to just go through a little bit of repeating, but have to very much compliment the Atascadero Mutual Water Company. It has been extremely successful for 100 years, and our community really, I think, through these drought years and the problems dealing with the state and seeing the response of other entities around the county and the state, I think grown to appreciate what a unique situation E.G. Lewis created over 100 years ago to have a privately held corporation that's ran like a business. We're all mutual share owners in that, and it's well managed. And I do want to acknowledge the city's done a heck of a lot, too. I do like to, you know, do mention that our wastewater treatment plant contributes, I hear, something like 25% of the water that is naturally recycled into the ground. Again, zero nitrates at the wellhead. So we've contributed, and we have actually some of the lowest cost water and wastewater treatment in the county, and that's really significant for our community. So I commend our city staff and the water company. And I enjoyed having a part in this with Mayor Martin, and I were active in bringing the two cities in to be supportive of this process. But I want to give a special thank you to the Community Services District in Templeton. They have been a really good partner in all of this and worked well with us. And I want to end by really complimenting our own Councilwoman Fonzie, who we had appointed as a liaison in water issues, kind of took that away and just actually assigned her to work at a number of committees dealing with water. And she's been kind of our own resident expert, and I know she's worked in many areas to go through. But I just want to thank you, Roberta, for the time you've put into this. And what's kind of nice is sometimes we even disagree on a few things, but we friends and we work on. We're great role models for the county. I think our group that's come together, here's a very diverse group, and not only have we all managed our roles very well, we're getting along, and it's very much of a camaraderie, this group that's formed. And again, I attribute a lot of that to your leadership, Mr. Neal, and thank you for, you know, I know you've worked hard at this and the water board, so we want to just acknowledge that. I couldn't do justice to all the things that Roberta's been involved with, but I'm going to ask for any ex parte communication folks have had on this topic. I'll just go from my left to my right, and then you can kind of fill us in a little bit. We can't hear it all, Roberta. You've been involved in too much on this one, but thank you.
I've had several short discussions with Mr. Neal on this topic.
No ex parte.
A number of meetings with other agencies, lots of conversations with Mr. Neal, a number of conversations with folks in Regional Water Quality Control Board world and engineers with some expertise in this area. And again, it just reinforced nothing I've heard that's really significantly different than what we've talked about publicly, but just reinforces that we're very lucky where we are. Councilwoman Fonzie.
Thank you. Mine would have to start back with the formation of the district that was voted down for Paso Robles. I actually testified in front of the Board of Supervisors and met with all five of those members, which I would have to include in the ex parte, asking them to exclude Atascadero Subbasin from that larger Paso Robles groundwater basin. And we were successful in that one. We won one because it would have changed what we look like today, that is for sure. I've been sitting on LAFCO for quite a number of years and have voted on the other water districts that were proposed, one in Shandon, one in Creston El Pomar area that's coming soon again. And I have received probably 1,000 emails or more from various citizens, meeting with quite a number of those and talking about water and what it's like where they live and how it will be governed and how a GSA works. So I think the list is probably too extensive to say, but I would say I'm my own person. I make up my own mind, so I don't know that they would be ex parte just because I have to sift it all out and then make up my mind.
No ex parte.
Well, that is it. We'll open it up to the public. Anyone wishing to comment on this item before we make a decision? Seeing no one approach, I'll bring it, close public comment, bring it back to the council. I would ask Councilwoman Fonzie to take the lead on this, as she has in the past.
I would be honored. I would like to make the motion that the council adopt the draft resolution authorizing the city manager to execute a memorandum of agreement with other participating entities forming a groundwater sustainability agency for the Atascadero Basin.
I'll second that motion. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Bobo?
Yes.
Councilmember Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Councilmember Sturdivant?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Fonzie?
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley?
Yes.
Motion passes 5-0.
Thank you. Next item, C1 Management Reports, is regarding Zoo Garden Event Center project update. I am going to step down from leading this discussion, and it's really on a technicality dealing with event sites. As you know, since I own Portola Inn, which does operate as hosting events, just to be on the cautious side of the issue related to any decisions, I will not participate on this item or in the future if it's involved with setting fees of anything that could be an event site. I've done that related to the pavilion. We aren't really in direct competition in any way. However, it is a technical area that I feel I should go ahead and step down from. So I'll turn this over to Mayor Pro Tem Fonzie.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Will you be leaving the room then? Or?
No, I will just enter into the audience, which was the advice of the city attorney. Why don't you ask the city attorney?
Yes, I'd like to have the city attorney affirm that it's all right for Mr. Mayor to be in the audience.
Yes, it is, because to the extent that he has a personal interest in this item, which is the reason he's stepping down, he would, under the Political Reform Act, have the opportunity to speak to it to the extent that it might impact those personal interests.
Thank you, Mr. Pierick. Let's go ahead with our staff report, and will that be you, Rochelle, on this one?
That will be Deputy Public Works Director Ryan Hayes.
Thank you.
All right. Good evening, Council. We are excited about this. Do you have the clicker? Thank you. So we're about, well, kind of a long ways in to this, but I'm about a year and a half into this because that's how long I've been here. This is our Zoo Garden Event Center. So when I showed up here, we had a concept of what we wanted, and we've moved toward that. So for those, if anyone's unfamiliar, this is going to be essentially a bridge between the zoo and the lake park area. It's about a 2,400, well, I'm getting ahead of myself. This is the site plan as it stands right now. That is the, well, to the left there is the zoo, or is the flamingo area of the zoo. And then that'll be a new ADA pathway down from the zoo into the new event center. The fencing, this is kind of from a site design standpoint. We're going to try to keep the oaks that are there. We're going to attempt to maintain and keep the sycamore that's on the other corner. But it's a pretty tight site. It's where the volleyball court is right now. And we are maximizing that site. The fencing is going to be required to meet the zoo accreditation requirements. So it'll be an 8-foot fencing that matches what's existing around the zoo right now. So these drawings you see right here, we have an architect on board, Mark Deritz, who's doing all the design of this. He did the design of the bandstand as well. And it's kind of a combination of that we'll get into in a little bit of the Lake Park design guidelines, which is what the bandstand is really modeled after, an arts and crafts style, and then some of the kind of the color and aesthetic ideas of the zoo. But the actual square footage of it, it started off with a straight 40 by 60 building, but we had to shrink it down. We've got a pretty significant sewer pipe that's out there, so we had to get out of the way of that and stay off of it. So it shrunk down a little bit. It's still 40 feet wide, but then it got a little bit shallower. And then we've added to it since then. There was a desire to be able to store stuff for events like chairs, tables, all of that on site, so we didn't have to bring it in and out from the pavilion all the time. So you'll notice up on the kind of the upper left there is about a 10 by 30 foot. Oh, and also, sorry, the zoo event stuff that's going to take place there as well is going to get stored in there. There's a small utility room and then a prep sink and counter area, which we're adding just for events should it be needed. Again, let's see, yeah, about 2,200 square feet right now. Kind of way we've mapped it out is it's got space for seating for about 125 guests. And then One of the things that kind of came in a little bit later, but I think it's a great idea, is adding a 40-foot concrete patio to on the pavilion side of it to give it even more kind of open outdoor space. So as I mentioned, we've worked really hard with the architect to come up with something that kind of acts as a bridge between the zoo and the park, because we're serving two different uses. The idea of this is to be able to take over a lot of the events that were previously in the area that where the new exhibit's being built inside the zoo. We're losing that area, so we're adding this area outside. From an aesthetic standpoint, like I said, we're going with the Lake Park design guidelines with the arts and crafts. I'll show you a picture here in a second. You'll be able to kind of recognize that. But then bringing in a lot of the color and some of the design elements that they incorporate in the zoo building as well. So here's a front elevation. So this is actually, well, it's hard to describe how you'd be looking at it. This is the lengthwise from the path, right, that walks through there. Exactly. You can kind of see in the back right, that'll be the storage area, utility area, and then the whole thing's open. It's actually it's a really neat building. I'm excited about it. I think it looks great. I think it's hard to tell scale from this, but those eaves are close to 10 feet tall. So it's a tall, big structure, but it's going to be open. While at the same time, it's pretty cool. We've got those big oaks around it that'll kind of shield it and keep it in there, keep it sheltered in the evenings. This is from the front, so essentially looking back from the pavilion back toward the zoo. You'd see this perspective of it, and then you can kind of see the cutout. Terry's not here. I was going to give her a hard time. She had a desire to be able to bring in, to essentially host, if we could possibly in the future, the beer trucks inside this thing. So we will beef up the structure underneath the foundation to be able to support that, and there's the cutout so we can actually drive in the full-size off-road beer truck that we've got around here. So this is the park bandstand, so you can see that same cutout design. I'm not going to get into it too much, but the same rock base, so it'll really blend in well and be part of the park. There's some other stuff, shiplap siding. These are all parts of the Lake Park design guidelines. And then here's some things from the zoo. The fence is going to be the same type of fence, although we won't have that big concrete structure underneath it because we don't need it for the height, and we're going to try to kind of accent the building a little bit more. And then the colors and that rock base will also be incorporated to really tie it all together between the two. Oh, I forgot to put in recommendations on this. I apologize. But taking it from our staff report, our recommendations are to endorse the preliminary design and direct staff to move ahead and proceed with the completion of the construction bid documents. And second, staff went out and spoke with a couple of local contractors here in the area just to get an idea of the structure cost, which is the predominant cost to this, just to make sure what we had budgeted already, as we got into this structure was adequate. In my discussions, what I received was that we were pretty under budgeted to build the structure the way that we had it designed. I'll turn it over maybe to Terry or Jerry for the funding portion of this, but the second part of the recommendation is to authorize Director of Administrative Services to appropriate an additional $250,000 from the Public Facilities Fund reserve balance to the Zoo Garden Event Center, and the total revised project budget is $570,000, which we're very comfortable with having run the preliminary cost estimates at this time. Any questions? I guess that's.
Thank you. I see Mr. Burbo. Go ahead. Did you have a question?
If you could back it up one slide, because I think that it kind of answers my question. I was looking on the map, and it says chain link fence, and so that kind of concerned me in my mind, visualizing a chain link fence. And of course, the drawings show the building and not what it's going to look like through the fence. But in this thing, you're indicating that the exterior fencing would be more like that around the zoo.
That is correct. I'm okay. Not sure. There's some. So on the south side of the building over there where it says chain link fence, that's an existing, is that thing 10, 12 feet tall with barbed wire on top? That is the quarantine area of the zoo. It's got the green slat fencing in it. That will need to stay because that is a no-look barrier into the zoo. We're going to attempt to soften that up a little bit off the back. Part of the reason for putting the storage area on the back is about half of it is blocked by the storage area, so you won't see it. And the other half, well, there's the big sycamore tree, and then we're going to try to soften it up with some landscaping, some drought-tolerant type landscaping in there, low maintenance.
Okay, so that chain link fence will remain, but it's not part of the project. It's already there.
That is correct.
Okay, got it. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Sturdivant?
Question on, so you had mentioned about the original size that you had planned for, so, you know, scaling it down and making these changes, is that still filling the intent of what you wanted this building for?
Yeah, the scaling down, sorry, I made that probably sound worse than it was. I had to get it out from over the top of a sewer pipe. So originally it was 40 by 60, now it's 40 by 56, and then we just pushed it closer to the zoo.
Okay.
So and kind of pushed it out on the side a little bit. So it's actually a little bit bigger than the original 40 by 60 footprint, but in different ways.
Yeah, I was going to say, it sounds like with the patio and building, yeah, it sounds
exactly,
like
you're
getting what you're looking for. Okay, thank you.
Ms. Moreno?
Glad to hear that, because I saw something that said like 40 by 20, and I was like, wow, that was a huge scale down. So, you know, the fencing, I don't see that in the sketch of the south, east, north, and west elevation. So, I mean, is it actually, does the fencing go all around that patio, but it's just not in the drawing, otherwise it's sort of obscure looking at everything else?
Yes. Well, no, it's significant. I'll be honest with that. Rochelle and I, or city manager, have talked about that a little bit. The architect actually put together a mock-up in Revit. I don't have it as part of this, but it kind of shows the fence. The fence isn't quite right on it, so I didn't want to bring it in because it doesn't look quite right. But given the, since when they open this to the zoo, it the fencing around this becomes the perimeter fence of the zoo. So it's required to meet the requirements, which is an 8-foot-tall fence.
Okay.
We're trying to tie it into the zoo by using the same fence. I don't know that there would be a better fence that would be less visible, but it is going to be the fence is visible.
Okay. So, I mean, it's if we picture, say, the bandstand, you wouldn't have the fencing right, you know, in line with the pillars at the bandstand. It would be on the outskirts of the bandstand, and that's how this will look.
This will be, yeah, out. It wouldn't be right up against the building itself. But it will be close. Ryan and I have joked that we're going to put a new plaque, you know, Homo sapiens, because it will look like we are exhibited
like
at the zoo a little
like
bit. But we're trying to maximize it. We're putting it as far away from the building as we wanted. We tried to lift up. That's one of the reasons the building is so high, so that you didn't have, you know, the fence look like it was right underneath the eaves type of thing. Trying to do as much as we can, still meet those USDA and American Zoo and Aquarium accreditation standards. If we want to bring animals in there, which is the primary use for this, is for zoo education programs, we do need to maintain that 8-foot fence. There's not a ton of room there, so you couldn't go a little bit wider or further out, but we're going to do the best we can.
Okay. All right. This is a great project. Thank you.
Thank you. I was wondering if you could put up the slide that had the blueprint, please. One back. There we go. Can you orient us, if we were at the volleyball court, which direction does this face?
Sure. So the upper portion of this is up against the flamingo area, essentially. And then the right side of it is in line with the existing front fence of the zoo, more or less. So the pathway that comes from the zoo parking lot or the front parking lot of the park down to the pavilion would run to the right of this.
Okay, very good. And could you put up the picture of the front of the building?
Sure.
Great, thank you. And it's tough to tell where the walls are. Is this open all the way through except that storage area?
That's correct.
It's just like a giant patio? Okay, that's what I thought, but I couldn't tell.
With large pillars, like essentially, for support throughout on the outside exterior, but it's open entirely inside other than the storage area.
Mm-hmm. And just looking at this picture, the roof looks like it goes up like a mansard roof and then it's flat, but I'm sure that must not be the case.
No, well, it's got some gables that are coming out from the sides there. So
this does not have a flat roof.
No, it does not.
Okay, and what is the roofing material? Is it going to be similar to the
bandstand? We're planning for to match in with the existing buildings there. It'll be an asphalt comp type material.
Okay, and can you just explain what kind of events you see going on there? Obviously, it's going to be for things with the animals, but if we're taking beer trucks up onto this platform, this patio, what are you thinking about? Is this brew in the zoo or weddings? What do you see?
The answer is yes. We wanted the space to be as flexible as humanly possible. That area that is currently where the Red Panda exhibit is going in was used for zoo education things such as birthday parties, sleepovers, puppet shows, animal talks, brew at the zoo, zoofari, all of those types of things. And so we'll continue to want to use that space for that. In that instance, what we'll do is we'll go ahead and close. There'll be a gate that opens up onto the zoo, a smaller pedestrian gate, the existing gate that's there. On the exact opposite side of the building, I'll call it the pavilion side of the building, there's going to be a large gate where you can open it for vehicles to go in and out of. We wanted that ability. We're not necessarily saying we are going to bring a vehicle in there, but you didn't want to build it and then go, oh, darn, if only we could, and do that. The gate on the other side of the building, you could always close the gate at the zoo and then open it up to the lake park. It's a nice fenced area, so something like Lake Fest, where they have to have a roped-off area for alcohol sales or something like that, this would be a fantastic space for those types of things. Wine Festival, I'm sure, will like to use this, all those types of things. It will be available. While most Saturdays, a lot of activities occur during the day at the zoo. Mm-hmm. Certainly Saturday evenings, Friday evenings, Sundays, it could be rented out for weddings, rehearsal dinners, family reunions, whatever use there may be. So what we were just doing when we designed it, we had somebody from the pavilion, so Patty was there. We had Alan Baker, the zoo director. We had Terry Banish, our marketing and events person, myself, Public Works. And we also had Public Works operations and maintenance there, because maintenance was a key portion of this too, to try and design and have poor Mark had to design something that met all of our needs and was very flexible. We really want this to be used all the time, and so we'll do that.
Very good. And one last question for you, Ryan. That in a building like this, we want to have everything built in as much as possible in terms of lots of electrical outlets for vendors that may have different products that they need to light up, maybe a PA system. I don't know whether we'd have outdoor lighting or do things for Christmas, but I'm trying to think ahead of what we need, and I'm wondering if those types of things have been accommodated in this building.
Yes, much to my chagrin at times. Rochelle has been adamant about, I'm a little worried about the sheer amount of outlets we're going to have in this building. No, just kidding. We do have, another consultant, we have Toma Electric on board, who's doing the design of the electric for this building. And all along, our intention, well, not necessarily my intention, but now it is to have a ton of flexibility in here electrically. So I don't know exactly, with it being right next to quarantine, what kind of fixed sound system we'll have in here, but lighting, options for lighting, electrical, that's all going to be included.
Mm-hmm. I was hoping we'd have internet connection and all kinds of things, because I can see an educational use for this with movies for kids on animals or what's going on with different groups around the world with zoos. I just see a broad array of uses for this, but we just have to plan it very carefully and do it right. Thank you.
Yeah. We had not thought of internet. That's a fantastic idea, so we will do that. For the sound system, I think at this point we're looking more for a portable sound system, but that has been designed in. It would be on the end next to the flamingos facing outwards towards the park. Some of that, again, the storage shed was put on that side to be not just a visual buffer to the chain link fence, but also a noise deadening buffer to the chain link fence, along with the landscaping we're putting along that side, just to really look at the animals. So Alan had a big say in all of that, too.
Yes, Mr. Sturdivant. Heather? I'm sorry.
That's all right. So that got me thinking. So there, you said the sound barrier. So for the animals, like when it comes to the conservation area and even the flamingos, like how would that impact them having a sound system kind of right on the other side of the wall?
It will affect them, and we're going to be careful with that just as we are with all of our zoo events. Their nesting area tends to be at the other side of the exhibit, the far side of the exhibit. And again, we would always want the speakers pointed away from the flamingo exhibit. So while it will be closer, it's not being broadcast towards them, but the other way. And we're looking at sound systems that are more directional and can do that.
And you said Alan's been a big part of this, so he... Yes. Obviously, anything that's going to harm the animals, he's not going to buy off on.
Absolutely.
You mentioned sleepovers.
Yes.
We have sleepovers at
we
the zoo?
We do. We have zoo camp sleepovers. You can come spend the night and do all of that. It's in our recreation guide. Take a look at it.
Wow. I learned something new. All right. Thanks.
Very good. Thank you. I'm going to open it up to the public for a public comment. Is there anyone who would like to speak?
Good evening. Tom O'Malley, proprietor of Portola Inn, a great addition to our community. And anyone, of course, I can speak in the relation that it has an impact on my business. Most folks representing the Tourism Business Improvement District Board, we all feel you can't have too many events. You know, events draw other events. Having multiple venues at the site, you've got the pavilion, you've got the bandstand, having this, it allows for drawing in larger events because you already have parking there. This engineer has a future. A former city engineer promised me when we did Sunken Gardens, you'd never run out of power, and the first event we had, we're blowing circuits, you can't have enough power. At Portola Inn, we literally have multiple 20-amp circuits 4 feet apart everywhere, and amazing. When you line up caterers and they all want to plug something in without blowing out each other, and having separate circuits just for anyone that's doing music so that you don't have the feedback going on through the electrical wires, amazing what that will do. Something I did not win on when we were looking at the bandstand, because it's involved with that with Kiwanis raising the funds, I suggested we add additional underground conduit. We have done this at venues I've worked on for separate speaker wires. Because if you think of when you go setting up speakers, like out at the bandstand, you're running speaker wires out in the direction where people are sitting and walking. It's like these cords, there's always tripping hazards. And it's kind of nice to actually have conduit pre-wired where you have, if it's your speaker system, you can even have speakers mounted and they're permanent in these all of these areas. That way, a sound technician can have it pre-balanced and you don't have this problem impacting the neighborhood. So it's something to think that through. Just, you know, let's just have our own built-in sound system, which I did in our little carriage house event center, so it's balanced and it helps. I can comply with the city's noise ordinance, so I am assuming the city will apply with its noise ordinance as well. Thank you for hearing me. Oh, look, I still have 3 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you.
You may be seated. I always wanted to say that. Okay, I'm going to close public comment and bring it back to the council for deliberation or a motion.
Well, if we're ready to go, I'm happy to make a motion. If you can put those recommendations up for me, I'll scroll back. Here we go. I recommend I move that council endorse the preliminary design of the Zoo Garden Event Center and direct staff to proceed with the completion of construction bid documents and to authorize the Director of Administrative Services to appropriate an additional $250,000 from the Public Facilities Fund Reserve balance to the Zoo Garden Event Center for a revised total project budget of $570,000.
I'll second.
Motion by Ms. Moreno, second by Mr. Brubeau. Roll call vote, please.
Councilmember Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Councilmember Brubeau?
Yes.
Councilmember Sturtevant?
Yes.
And Mayor Pro Tem Fonsi?
Yes.
Motion passes 4-0.
Thank you.
Okay.
Okay. Well, we are moving on to Santa Lucia and Via Bridge Replacement Projects, item two. And we'll turn over to, again, to our city engineer for a report.
I'm just so excited about our new bridges. All right, so we have one staff report, but I decided to split it into two presentations because they do have some differing things we need to talk about on them. So first, the Santa Lucia Road Bridge Replacement Project. We also have the Via Bridge, which I'll talk about. Via Road, I'll talk about. Avenue, I'll talk about in a second. So going back in history a little bit, both of these projects began in, I believe, 2014. So prior to my time, when there was an original assessment that was done on these, right before, in the spring before I showed up in 2015, they were approved, funded, and then Caltrans came out and did a walk with Nick DeBar, city staff, to take a look at both of these bridges. This is our Santa Lucia Bridge, so to give some context, I'm sure you know where it is. It was out by Llano, right at the intersection of Llano Road. It was built in 1926. It's 18 feet wide, clear width out there, which you know if you've tried to cross it with someone, a horse trailer coming the other way. There were some small railing upgrades, safety upgrades completed in 2015, but other than that, it's the original bridge. And it has limited sight distance, no shoulders, and the bridge concrete structure is, if you've been underneath it, it's definitely spalling and deteriorating pretty quickly. I mean, for a 90-year-old bridge, it's actually doing shockingly well. So we have a design consultant. We've come to you, or I've come to you before with these bridges about a year ago. For the original phase one design of this. So now we've moved into phase two. Phase one was preliminary engineering and environmental, preliminary environmental documents. This is where we're at right now. Quincy Engineer is our consultant, and then they have a team of sub-consultants working for them to do environmental. We also have Kathy Pence, who is doing our contract administration, because with this being all federal money on this one and primarily federal money on Via Avenue, there's a lot of paperwork that goes along with it. All of our consultants have been doing a fantastic job. I do need to give them a shout out. And Caltrans, the local assistance person we deal with mostly over there, commented just the other day that we have a dream team of consultants on these projects. So I do have to give them kudos for really excellent work so far. It has taken a ton of work off of my plate. But here's where we're at on this. I don't want to scare you with the concrete end railing down there on the bottom. Don't worry. We are looking actively at different railing treatments because it's essentially all you can see on both of these bridges. They're very low visibility from the outside. So aesthetically, there is some allowance for federal funds, FHWA funds, to be able to do aesthetic treatments, and we're going to be looking at ways to make these fit kind of within the rural nature and not have them look like an urban bridge. Our new proposed bridge is roughly 36 feet wide at this location. It has 11-foot lanes and 5-foot shoulders, which, as a cyclist, I'm very excited about because right now it's frightening. And then there will be some improvements as well just at the intersection of Llano there. I think the biggest improvement we're going to see when you look at this from an aerial perspective is that we get a considerable amount of comments in Public Works, and I'm sure City Manager Office does as well, with regard to site distance and pulling from Llano out onto Santa Lucia. Understandably, the site distance is bad. Generally, people are flooring it coming off of the last turn heading west, and getting out of Llano with a horse trailer onto an 18-foot bridge with traffic coming at you at 50 miles an hour is not the best situation. So this, by opening up the bridge, widening it out, giving better sight distance, and then additionally putting that 5-foot shoulder out there to swing out onto, it's going to be considerably better than the situation we have now, and it'll be a brand new bridge. This is what I talked about a little bit already, but right now it's proposed to be a single span concrete cast in place bridge. There will probably be an alternative as we go forward for the contractor to be able to do a precast, but getting a bridge out there on Santa Lucia is probably difficult, so I doubt they'll go that direction.
Yeah.
Let's see. Currently, we're in preliminary design, although we have The type selection report actually just got sent to me today for this bridge. This one's a little bit behind the Avenue Bridge because of some detour routing I'll talk to you about in a moment. This is our recommended alternative for design construction of this bridge. We've looked at a few, but the one that really makes the most sense is putting in a temporary one-lane bridge adjacent to the south of the existing bridge, tearing the whole bridge out at once, and then routing traffic over. It'll be signal controlled on both sides, kind of like you see up in Big Sur when they're doing work up there, to allow traffic across one direction at a time. And this one shortens the time frame considerably because they're able to take the whole bridge out. One of the alternatives I'll talk about doesn't do that, and it does take quite a bit longer. This impacts the least amount of our residents that live out to the west of this. As you know, this is, with the exception of Balboa, which is an unpaved, non-maintained dirt road, this is the only way out for everybody to the west of this bridge. Our recommended design and, or construction detouring and construction staging will take, it's estimated, 5 to 6 months of construction. There will be a temporary one-lane bridge installed at the south of the existing bridge, and due to all of the construction that takes place for the footing and abutments for these bridges, Yano Road will need to be closed at least for a portion of that time. Probably for the whole time, because getting traffic out and onto a one-lane bridge from the close proximity of Yano is not feasible. In order to do that for the residents of Yano, our recommended alternative is to upgrade the small bridge at the end of Yano Road where it ties back into the to the west. We've gone out and looked at that. The structure itself is in pretty decent shape. It's about 16 feet wide. It's just the decking is really old. Part of this project will be to upgrade that decking, replace it, and to get it up to be able to meet all of our traffic constraints, including the bigger garbage trucks would probably be our heaviest load out there, although I've also checked with fire and school to make sure their vehicles. So we'll design it to be able to take that kind of traffic out there for that time. They'll utilize the dirt road and to go down and through there, and that would just be the residents on Yano. Everyone else would continue on Santa Lucia the same way. This is the proposed detour. The longest detour you would be required to take as part of this would be, it's about 3.5 to 4 miles. It's about 7 extra minutes. One thing I should note is that this, although Yano will be closed, a question I get a lot is that one of the things the contractor will be required to do is to allow access for emergency vehicles through to Yano. So that detour does not apply in the event of an emergency. We'll have to work around how we do that, but that will be, emergency vehicles will still be able to take that intersection. The other alternatives that we looked at, and this bridge, there were no silver bullet alternatives. There's going to be impacts no matter how we replace this bridge, just because of the difficulty of its location and the fact that there's no real other alternate ways out. We looked at a full bridge closure, which would be the shortest amount of time. It would take about a month off of the schedule to just do a full shutdown, take Santa Lucia out and route, essentially it's about 300 parcels up through Balboa. The impacts in time, it adds an additional about 10 minutes to get back into town if you go that route, not to mention the fact that now you're impacting all of the neighborhoods on Santa Ana, San Fernando, Del Rio, and basically that whole part of town over there would be impacted by the additional traffic as well. And with the bridge entirely out, there would be no emergency access that route. So all emergency access would have to go the other through Balboa as well, which would add quite a bit of time. The other option was a staged bridge construction where we take down one half of the bridge, run traffic over the other half while we build the other half of the bridge, and then flip-flop them. There were a few issues. One, it's the longest construction period. It adds about 2 or 3 months because of the difficulty of building a bridge that way. The Yano Road detour would still be required for the Yano residents because we still have to shut down the intersection there. And with the narrowness of the existing bridge, it would be, you'd be really close to construction work. It'd be a 9-foot lane max for people going across. It'd be one lane, and then there'd be construction work taking place directly adjacent to you. So both of these alternatives weren't really considered to be feasible or or as good as our recommended alternative. So construction schedule, because I know you're interested. We are, this started in 2013, 2014, went through project initiation. Last year, came to you in March, I believe, to get the original design contract approved. We've gone through, like I said, I just got the type selection report, which from Quincy today. We'll review that, and I believe we're meeting with them next week to go over that if we have any comments, engineering. And all the preliminary studies have been done. There's quite a few of them. Moving forward, the next phase two, the way that we had these things laid out originally, phase two is our final design, and a lot of that final design work plays into and is needed as part of the environmental work going forward, because there is a lot of environmental work on these. We'll go into permitting, right-of-way acquisition. We don't believe there will be any permanent right-of-way acquisition for this, but we will need two temporary construction easements from the adjacent property owners on the south side. I've spoken with both of them. They're both willing to do that. We have to work through a few things, but they're amenable to that. And then our planned construction is for essentially the summer with the windows on both sides of spring and fall of 2019. So our recommendations are that we approve, or that you approve, Santa Lucia Road, the preliminary bridge design, which, as I said, it's very preliminary at this point. It's just there's not the layout that you'll see for VIA right now, and the proposed construction detour, and then direct staff to proceed with final design, and additionally to authorize the city manager to execute a contract amendment with Quincy Engineering for phase two design work for $295,000. That was... the same, that has not changed since when we came last March for phase one and said there would be a phase two coming. So before I go on to VIA, I'll open it up for any questions on Santa Lucia.
Thank you. And I'm assuming that we can go through questions on this and then go through the next bridge, and then we'll open up to the public and go forward. Okay, so this is questions on the Santa Lucia Bridge. Looking to the lights, we have Mayor Pro Tem Fonzie, followed by Councilman Burbeau.
Thank you. Good report.
Thanks.
Just curious about those railings. You said that they're going to be made so they're not quite so industrial looking. But one of the concerns I think those who ride horses in particular would have, that the railings are not low like you see along freeways so often, the bent metal that you had in the picture. Will these be higher so that there's not a problem for the horses freaking out on the bridge, which they often do?
Mm-hmm. Yes, there's. While we're going to try to make it look as rural as we can, there are quite a few. They're very regulated in terms of what we can put in, and the height is mandated. I think I'm not an expert on it, but I believe 36 inches is the minimum height for a railing on a bridge. So they will be considerably taller than what we have right now.
Okay, and I don't want to get you completely off track, but as long as I can remember, Llano Bridge has been closed. And is this a city-maintained bridge? Obviously, I would say not, because it's not maintained. So how are we able to use this and do the decking, and will we get two for the price of one if we do Santa Lucia and have them improve Llano so we can continue to use it?
We've had discussions with Caltrans about including this because as part of a construction project, we have to go through and look at all the different cost feasibility of all of our different options. So we have to get Caltrans to buy off on it. They have bought off on the idea, and it should actually be pretty low cost since it's just the decking material to replace. But to date, we have gotten preliminary approval of the FHWA funds being able to be used to make those improvements on the Llano Bridge.
So after the Santa Lucia Bridge is done, will the bridge continue to be open on Llano?
That's the discussion we've been having. We have no reason to believe not. It had been closed because garbage trucks had been using it, and it wasn't rated for being safe for them anymore. But after this bridge improvement, it will be. And we've heard a lot. We had a public meeting on this bridge, and that was one of the big comments we received a lot, was that the public out there wanted to see this remain open after the project.
Would it be helpful to have police and fire weigh in with Caltrans, because I'm sure that it would help them to get where they need to go as well?
They've already given us approval on it. So,
okay.
But if they come back on that, I will have them.
All right. Very good. Thank you.
Thank you. Let's see. Councilmember Barbeau, followed by Councilman Sturdivant.
Instead, a question about money. The staff report indicates this will be 100% federally reimbursed.
Okay.
I'm wondering what the cost, the construction cost ballpark is, and is the federal government committed to this regardless of what the cost turns out to be? I mean, if it's a $3 million bridge and it turns out to be a $5 million bridge, is there any risk that the federal money won't come through fully?
One of the things I've learned as part of this project that I did not know, and I learned I'm in the wrong part of civil engineering, is that when it comes to bridges, everything I've heard is you pretty much get what you need for these. So it's kind of the one area actually that's different than that. When we came in, we had an original amount allotted. I think it was $375,000 for design. Quincy came in. They were obviously the most qualified to do the work. But their cost proposal was, you know, almost double that. We went, and it was almost no hassle at all to get that additional funding approved. So to answer your question, should they come in higher than that, I don't believe it'll be an issue.
Okay. Because we're in a time frame, as we just saw with the zoo project, of increasing bid estimates. And so I just want to make sure that, you know, we're prepared for that eventuality. It sounds like we are. Thank you.
Unlike the city, the federal government can print money, so we're okay. Well, Councilman Sturdivant was paying attention, had his questions answered, so we can move on to Councilman Moreno.
Well, I'm wondering, how do we reclassify overpasses as bridges?
Yeah.
We can do that. All of many
good
problems
strategy.
Are solved. Once we touch that Yano Bridge, does that become a city-maintained bridge?
The way we're approaching that is, since this is a part of this project and needed for the construction of this project as a detour, no. It's required as a portion of the project, but not, we're not doing that as a city project.
Okay. Is there any risk that it's otherwise? And I don't know if that's something our city attorney can answer or...
Well, I suppose there's always risks, but I'm assuming that Ryan has received information which would suggest that it would not be a city bridge, so... I'd rely on what he's been told.
Okay. In the staff report, you say there was, you know, maybe 40 to 50 residents that we met with, and so it seems like you did a really good outreach. Does it seem like a pretty good percentage of the people there? Do we hear rumblings in the other area? Are the residents pretty like, hey, this needs to be done, we're glad it's going to get done, and we'll bear with this for this five-month period, and we're good to go?
To be honest, I was surprised by the unanimity of the residents at that. They all, almost nearly all, actually I don't know that anyone actually even disagreed with our recommended alternative, and they're all very happy to see this bridge get upgraded, and they're, even the directly adjacent property owners that will be impacted recognize they'll be impacted the most, but they're more than willing to go ahead with it.
So, great. Mm-hmm. Great. Last question, and this would be for our city manager. On page 253 of the staff report, this is listed under the Via Avenue Bridge Federal Bridge Number Revision, but my question is with this very last paragraph under that section. It says the fiscal impact, estimated at $31,540 in budgeted LTF over the next 18 months. And then it says the current budget has $200,000 programmed for fiscal year 16-17 for each of the bridges, but I didn't think we were using LTF for Santa Lucia, just for VIA.
I believe that's just a typo.
Okay. Oh, good.
Thank you. That makes
me feel better. Okay. Thank you.
Any other council questions? Well, let's go ahead and take your comment.
I just, you were giving shout outs to the, to your vendors or the people you're using to do all this. Actually, I want to give a shout out to you and all the staff, because I have a coworker who's actually part of that. He lives out there, and he was telling me about the meetings, how well they were run, how just what good information you gave, and just how clear, they're very confident in the decision and the direction we're going. In fact, I asked him before I came here, and he said, no, he feels very comfortable with the direction, and he was very appreciative of the good job that the city staff did. So that's a shout-out for you.
Thank you.
Other questions or comments? I think we can move on to discussion on the VIA Bridge.
Okay. So VIA is a considerably different animal. This is much easier compared to Santa Lucia. There are easy detour routes that we can take the whole bridge down, and I will get into that. So the existing bridge, just to kind of give you a little background again, I'm sure you all know it. I go across it quite frequently. Was constructed in 1948. Actually, our sub-consultant did a historical document that's required as part of this. It's actually really fascinating, but it's 20 feet wide right now. It is stop control. Oh, it's this one is classified. Actually, I forgot to mention that in the last one. Santa Lucia is classified as a functionally obsolete bridge, and VIA is actually classified as structurally and functionally obsolete. So, duo here. It has limited sight distance, no shoulders, and as a result of the tight turn we have on the far side and the loading on the bridge, weight limit, posted weight limits, we have stop controlled on both sides currently, which I get a lot of questions about. Our proposed bridge, I believe you've all seen this before, but we are making a pretty significant change to this. The original right-of-way and layout of the city has Ensenada going through and then VIA tees in. But that was closed, I believe, in 2002, 2003 as a result of an accident, unfortunate accident out there. And there's really no intention to open that back up. With the intersection alignment that we have right now, it needs stop control. And even with a new bridge in there, it wasn't going to improve the alignment of this. I know I spoke with our community development director quite a bit. This is a pretty, this is the only zoned industrial area we have in town to the west of the bridge. And there is interest in getting this opened up to be able to make our transportation flow through here better. So we looked at a second alternative, which was actually building the bridge on a curve, on a curved alignment. Originally, the consultant thought this would add quite a bit of cost to the project, and Caltrans may or may not buy off on that because they do have to approve any cost additions. But then when they re-ran it, they were able to get it all in a single span, and they don't expect that the cost will be significantly different than doing a straight alignment bridge across here. With regard to right-of-way, the Creek Reservation through here is owned in fee by ALPS, the Atascadero Land Preservation. I've spoken with them quite a bit. They have no issue with a change in alignment of the bridge, and the city owns both the right-of-way and an adjacent parcel west of Ensenada that where the majority of this new alignment would be placed. The advantages of the proposed bridge design are with a straight alignment bridge, we had just a slew of design exceptions that were going to be required. It didn't meet essentially any of the horizontal and vertical alignment requirements for the design speed that we'd post out there. The new bridge, I believe there's two or three design exceptions, but they're minor and should be easily acquired. It'll be a posted, at least on the west side, 35-mile-an-hour speed zone, and the new bridge will be 45 feet wide, 12-foot lanes, 8-foot shoulders, and a 5-foot sidewalk, which we originally had on the east side because we have some existing improved sidewalk, but then when we looked at it more, it made a lot more sense to actually switch it over to the west side toward town, put the sidewalk on that side of the bridge. So the new curved alignment, it meets almost all design requirements without exceptions, improves circulations, and if you've ever lived by a stop sign, you know that the noise and air pollution generated by that many people starting and stopping a lot is significant, and this will decrease that, which we're happy about. Construction impacts here, since we're able to take down the entire bridge at once and rebuild, our expected construction timeline is 4 to 5 months. Full closure of the bridge, and then traffic detouring would have to come down essentially here to the Lewis Avenue Bridge for anyone trying to come through the traffic way or Capistrano. Utility coordination will be required. Obviously, we have quite a few utilities hanging from the bottom of this. There will need to be temporary relocation and then resetting, but that's all pretty standard for a bridge replacement. And then overall, honestly, there's pretty minimal impacts expected as a result of the construction activities for this bridge. Like I said, this one's quite a bit easier. We are going through our budget process, as you all know right now, and we've actually swapped them. Originally, we had Santa Lucia planned for the spring through fall of 2018 next year, and then VIA for 2019 to try to split up the impacts of the bridges. We've actually swapped them because VIA's proven to be considerably easier and is moving quicker. So move forward VIA probably to 2018, and then with the anticipated Santa Lucia in 2019. So we're still on schedule for that right now, and then this will move us into approval of this recommendation would move us into final design for this bridge. Our staff recommendations are to approve the VIA Avenue preliminary bridge design and direct staff to proceed with the final design, phase two. Authorize the city manager to execute contract amendment with Quincy Engineering for phase two design work of $286,000. And this bridge does have a partial match from the city. It's 11.47%. And so this would require an additional appropriation of $28,560 in local transportation funds for the VIA Avenue bridge project. So with that, any questions?
Questions from council. Councilman Fonzie.
Question regarding the businesses that are down there. When this is closed, it may have an impact. They're going to need to, for instance, I know there's an automotive place. I take my car there. And when you come out, there's really not an easy way to turn around. How are we going to accommodate that and for the farm supply across the street?
For traffic approaching from?
You come off traffic way, you're heading down mm-hmm. via, there's a business to your right, a business to your left. And I think the one to the right will be the particular problem because they park at the curb, they take the cars and fix them, put them back on the curb, and you have to turn around to get out with the bridge closed.
There is a there's a pretty big dirt area that's within our right-of-way, and actually I believe part of it might be actually on the parcel, but it's all the same owner for that auto shop and the yard behind there and everything. I would expect that as part of our that's an excellent question, and as part of our construction phasing, we'll have to improve at least temporarily a portion of that for turnaround traffic.
Very good. And I'm going to assume that once the bridge is in, we're going to have more traffic on it. Would you project that, or really you think it'll stay about the same?
That's a good question. I don't have an answer for that. I would expect there may be a little more traffic, especially if that area does develop industrially. There might be a little bit more, but from a residential traffic standpoint, I don't know that it'll have too much of an impact. I wouldn't expect too much.
Well, the only reason I bring it up is because currently if you're heading from VIA onto traffic way and making a left turn, at times it can be pretty difficult to see. You're on an uphill slope and you're stopped. And if you drive with a manual transmission, it can be a bit of a challenge too. I'm just thinking down the road we're going to need to pay some attention to that intersection.
Yes. As we found out on part of this, there are some constraints on that. Where you take your automotive place is a historical building, the old ice house built in the 20s, 1920, I believe. So there would be some constraints, but that's an excellent point. It is a difficult intersection.
Okay, thank you.
Well, I'm wondering, since it is the one area zoned industrial and we are looking for maximum build out in that area, do we have input from community development of what might be strategic if we're working on this? I assume that we're increasing the load the bridge could handle and the speed and any turning radius in that area, and maybe some permanent improvements in that road in that area is a good idea if we're really looking at maybe more industrial uses in the future. Have we thought this through to maximize the potential of those industrial lots?
I can answer it from I'll answer it from an engineering perspective. I have spoken with Phil a bit about it. This bridge will be able to handle anything that we throw at it. This handles the Caltrans, the state max semi-trailer across it. So it'll be weight-loaded to take pretty much anything you could put on it.
That sounds like a good answer.
And horizontally designed for that same reason. That part of that was the curve. It is difficult to get through that right now with I've spoken with a couple of the property owners on the west side, and they've got semi-trucks coming down and trying to turn around, do 40-point turns out in VIA right now. So this will allow for an actual through movement.
So, Mr. Dunsmore, I don't know if you're not actually on the agenda, but is there any more potential? Is there a benefit to this, to making that area more marketable to industry, do you think?
Absolutely. It's not our only industrial zone property, but right now it's one of our only vacant industrial zone properties in that region and in the city as a whole altogether. It is difficult to access. Fixing this bridge won't be the only solution to circulation problems that are currently over there. As Councilmember Fonzie noted, Traffic Way is a challenging intersection off to the south in Sonata. You're going through a residential neighborhood. It's difficult much further beyond the bridge, but the bridge itself dramatically helps that situation and really brings sort of a better circulation, better safety, and better eyes just on that whole section. So it'll also bring a sense of renewal and redevelopment to that little corridor.
Thank you. Any other council questions or comments? We can go to the public. I'll open up the public. Seeing no public input, we'll close public input, bring it back to council for further deliberation or a motion.
Mr. Mayor, I'm pleased to see anytime to see physical improvements, so I'd be happy to make the following five-part motion that the council approve the Santa Lucia preliminary bridge design and proposed construction traffic detour as described and direct staff to proceed with the final design and preparation of construction bidding documents, to authorize the city manager to execute a contract amendment with Quincy Engineering to provide professional engineering and environmental services for phase two of the Santa Lucia preliminary bridge replacement project for an estimated fee not to exceed $295,749, and to approve Via Avenue preliminary bridge design project and direct Public Works staff to proceed with final design and preparation of construction bidding documents, and to authorize the city manager to execute a contract amendment with Quincy Engineering to provide professional engineering environmental services for phase two of the Via Avenue preliminary bridge replacement for an estimated fee not to exceed $286,034, subject to federal bridge number revision and E76 authorization. And finally, to authorize the Director of Administrative Services to appropriate $28,560 in local transportation funds for the Via Avenue Bridge project.
I'll second.
All right. Did Mr. Burbeau get that right, Ms. City Clerk?
Yes.
Okay. Then we have a motion. Seconded. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Burbeau?
Yes.
Councilmember Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Councilmember Sturdivant?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Fonzie?
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley?
Yes.
Motion passes 5-0.
Thank you.
You know, for future reference, you could, if you wanted to save your voice, say that you're moving staff's recommendation, but I do understand the need to disclose, you know, what that recommendation is. So. But you do have a choice.
Thank you.
Well, we're happy to hear your recommendations, and we passed them. And that takes us on to council announcements and reports. And we will just take all together any committee reports or city council determinations. And I will just go from my right to my left of any comments you'd like to make. And then note that we are still going to a closed session, which I'll ask our city attorney to outline for us after we get through council. Go ahead.
No reports.
No report.
No report.
All things.
I just wanted to let the public know we do have a finance committee meeting tomorrow. It'll be our third one out of, I think, five total, from at 4 o'clock downstairs, room 106, open to the public. Feel free to come by and see how we're budgeting.
And, Mr. Mayor, as you know, since you called me and asked me, I will be attending the Integrated Waste Management Authority meeting tomorrow in lieu of you as the alternate.
Yes, and thank you. One thing on the agenda will be election of officers. I did mention the executive director, and you can let folks know I'm happy to. There's some discussion of how they're going to proceed on this, so I've said I would be happy to continue as vice chair. I'd be happy to move to chair, and I'd be happy to retire and continue on the board. So whatever, if the subject comes up, feel free to say it's whatever the board
It's a pleasure. Right.
Thank you. I thought I read in the minutes that they just appointed you as the vice president.
Yeah, they did. However, it was filling a vacancy. And so they actually have the election now on the agenda. So there's a lot of discussion of which way, how they want to handle that. So I don't have any preconceived notions. I'm happy to serve in any way.
All right. Thank you.
And thank you for covering for that. Is there any other staff announcements or anything before I turn it over? I'm going to turn it over then to our city attorney. We do have a closed session, and would you describe what we will be doing?
Yes, we have two items in closed session. One is a conference with labor negotiators pursuant to Government Code Section 54957.6. The authorized designated representatives are the city manager, Rochelle Ricard, and the employee organizations are listed in the agenda. Another item we have is a conference with real property negotiators. The authority there is Government Code Section 54956.8. The real property is 5901 East Mall in Atascadero, and also a vacant parcel on East Mall. The assessor parcel numbers are listed in the agenda. City manager is the city negotiator, and the negotiating parties are the County of San Luis Obispo and the United States Attorney. And the subject of the negotiation will be both price and terms of payment.
Thank you. And I'm going to open up to the public. Is there any member of the public wishing to comment on a closed session item? Seeing no one come forward, we'll close the public comment portion, bring it back. We will be adjourning to a closed session. However, we will report back at the conclusion of that if there is any reportable items, and the city attorney will do that. Any other pertinent information I need to share, Mr. City Attorney?
No, you've covered it all.
Very good. We'll adjourn to closed session. Thank you. Where will we be going for closed session this evening? And very good. Thank you.